Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is out with his big toxic asset bank bailout plan today. More public billions deployed to tempt in private cash, and he hopes get the engine of banking and finance restarted. After the bailout missteps of the fall, the bonus blow-up of last week, and questions over Geithner's leadership, he needs this to work. So does the world economy. Will it? And work for everyone. This hour, On Point, Team Obama's plan to bail out the banks. You can join the conversation. Is this it? The way out of the mess in American banking and finance. We will take a big look today. To help us do that, we're joined in the studio by Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect magazine. He's author of Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. He's also been quite critical of Secretary Geithner's approach so far. Bob Geithner, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you so much.
Also with us in the studio today, Jeffrey Frankel, professor of capital formation and growth at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. He served on the Council of Economic Advisors in the Clinton administration. Jeffrey Frankel, welcome back to you as well.
Good to be back, Tom.
And we will hear later in this hour from a Chicago School conservative analyst of Obama policy as well, Bob Kuttner, first to you. Timothy Geithner, bright and early this morning, sitting down with the press for what they call the pen and pad briefing. No cameras there. The camera has not been his best friend in recent weeks. But what about this plan? What do you see here? For starters, people will just be learning the details as they sit to listen to us.
You know, this is very painful for me. I mean, I was a big Obama fan early on. And I wrote a piece in September before Obama was even elected for the American Prospect called Meet the Next Treasury Secretary, predicting that Geithner would be the next Treasury Secretary because he had fans among both conservatives and liberals, and he had a great reputation as president of the New York Fed. I think what has happened is they are on the wrong path in the following way. They have decided that the way to get private money to rescue these toxic assets is to double down on the same kind of strategy that Hank Paulson unveiled back in October that didn't work, which was to have the government put up guarantees. In this case, government's providing as much as 94% of the capital.
And we're talking about out of $75 or $100 billion to start with and then up to as much as $1 trillion. Going in here over time.
What's very, very complicated, and that's part of the problem. I mean, I think there's an echo chamber effect going on where Larry Summers and Tim Geithner are talking to each other, and they're talking to the likes of Goldman and Citigroup. They're talking to the very same people who created the mess, and they're not talking to the critics of this approach. My sources say they're not even talking to Paul Volcker, who nominally heads a task force appointed by the president that has never met, who's a critic of this. They're certainly not talking to Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize laureate at Columbia, Nouriel Roubini at NYU, Paul Krugman, well-informed people who think this whole approach of having government put up a lot of the capital, guarantee almost all of the loss in the hopes of bringing hedge funds and private equity, the least transparent part of the system, the most underregulated and prone to abuse part of the system, back to the party to do the same kind of convoluted deals that helped cause this mess. It's incredibly risky. It's incredibly expensive. It may well not work. And there's also the risk of political backlash. If I can take two more seconds, let me read you something. This is this morning's Times, not Krugman's column, but the news story. Three chiefs of investment firms said in interviews that they were impressed with the terms of the program, which would have the government lend nearly 95% of the money for any investment, 95%, but remain reluctant to participate because of the potential for future regulation. So here are hedge funds and private equity. With one hand, the administration is saying, we got to regulate these guys. This is the shadow banking system. With the other hand, the administration is saying, come to our party, put in money, we'll guarantee the losses, you get the gains, and we'll go easy on you. It's a very tough straddle.
Jeffrey Frankel, how do you interpret what's going on here, why Timothy Geithner has set out on this path? You've got all this
the toxic assets, bad debt. Something has to be done with it. It's clogging up the whole system. Not enough lending is going on right now because of it. He's saying we're going to bring in a lot of public assets here from the TARP program, $75 to $100 billion. Assets from the Federal Deposit Insurance Company he's roping in here, the Federal Reserve. Put up maybe 95% of the money, something like that, and say to private investors, you also come in here with us. Help us buy up this stuff. We'll give you some protection on the downside, some real opportunity on the upside, and we get everything rolling again. How's it look to you, Jeffrey?
Well, I'm afraid I have to disagree with Bob Kuttner when he says they're on the wrong path, except in the sense that all paths are wrong. This is a very difficult problem. It's necessarily complicated. There's no easy way out, but I think they're basically on the right path. In Geithner's first speech, which didn't go over so well, he said more details were coming, and people complained, well, it's too vague. Well, we've got the details now, and although it's complicated, let me just sort of try to give a bit of an overview, mm-hmm. and this certainly is going to be hit from critics on all sides. I mean, the stock markets seem to be reacting well so far.
In Europe and Asia, certainly.
And I think the U.S. market opened mm-hmm. up.
We'll see where that goes.
I know the futures were up. We've been through this before on a smaller scale. Geithner certainly has our less direct personal at-home scale in terms of all the international crises, debt crises, and emerging market crises that he dealt with in his earlier incarnation in LTCM and all that. And the pattern is pretty familiar. There's a really good argument for not doing a bailout, coming from both the left and the right. The left says, why should we be giving this taxpayer money for this bloated financial sector that got us into the problem in the first place? It defies logic and fairness. And, you know, one can see the argument. And the right wing is equally scathing. They say this is a moral hazard. You bail them out now and they'll take more risks in the future. So you're going to see those critics from the left and the right. Mm-hmm. But then you're also going to see all these critics who say this doesn't go far enough. We need a total bailout. We need nationalization. I think that's essentially what Paul Krugman and some of the others that Joe Stiglitz have in mind that they want. And, you know, their argument is laissez-faire simply doesn't work in the financial sector, which I think is right. And they point to all these historical examples where time and time again, the longer you wait because you're afraid to bite the bullet, the worse it gets. So that describes Roosevelt 1933, our own saving and loan crisis in the late 1980s, Japan in the 90s. In each case, it ended up costing a lot, but it cost more if you postponed it because it was politically uncomfortable.
But let me ask you, there's a lot to be said here, but let me ask you this. At the technical level, put the politics aside, you know, what we end up with, what our system looks like on the other side of this for a second, it's too big to really put aside, but just for a moment, do you believe this will work, i.e. that this will, in fact, mop up the toxic assets and clear the way for new lending? Bob Kuttner may not like the profile of what goes on if it does, but do you think purely in a technical sense this is likely to work?
It's a big gamble. But anything's a gamble at this point. I mean, this is such a difficult situation. I think it's possible that it won't, and we'll be back asking for more in the future. There'll be some, you know, nationalization under some euphemistic name, and it'll be difficult. But I think there's a good chance it'll work. There's some chance it'll work, and I think they've thought pretty carefully, a lot more carefully than people give them credit for, at a technical level as to how to make this work, how to fix some of the problems. It is a very refined. It's very different from what the Bush administration was pushing, even though it uses the same money that was already put aside under the TARP. The Troubled Asset Relief Program, and some of the money that was still there is it uses. And
different,
by the way,
different in what way?
I have to correct something.
Yes.
This 95% statistic, that is just completely misleading. This is highly leveraged. This is not the government putting in 95% of the money to buy these the legacy securities. It's mainly private sector money.
I'm reading something like that almost everywhere here.
Well, I'm sure there is some number that is 95%, but it's not.
No, may I clarify?
Bob,
that?
Yes?
Highly leveraged is the key. The money is lent or guaranteed by the FDIC and the Federal Reserve. The amount of real money, real equity capital, mm-hmm. that the private investors put in exchange for a huge amount of possible upside profit, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is only 5 or 6%. This is not mostly private money. To the extent that it is private money, it's private money with either loans or loan guarantees from the Fed, the Treasury, the FDIC.
Well, a lot of people, I think, will look at this and feel your fear about, okay, you're going to have hedge funds and private equity back here. We'll be right back in the same game. On the other hand, Timothy Geithner has indicated for a long time he wants market forces at work here again to put some kind of reasonable value on these assets through an auction here. What's wrong with that?
Well, let me just say, if this were to work, and a lot of rich guys got even richer, I would hold my nose and say, if that's the price that it takes to get the banking system running again,
to avoid a depression. President Obama used the word again.
I can live with it. My concern is more that it's not going to work. And furthermore, that it's rife with potential for abuse. Let me give you one little example, and I hope this is not too technical.
Mm-hmm.
So a hedge fund or private equity company comes in and says, we will buy this toxic asset at 50 cents on the dollar.
Maybe it's a huge chunk of foreclosed homes or whatever bad debt it is.
Mm-hmm. Pool of loans. Then it buys a credit default swap.
Can it still do that?
Yes, they still exist. Hasn't been put out
of business. From AIG?
Yeah, well, from somebody else. Or you can write them. Yeah. Citibank can do it. So it's heads I win, tails you lose. If the value of the asset goes up, hedge fund makes out. If the value of the asset goes down, the government eats the loss, and the hedge fund collects on the credit default swap. There is all kinds of potential for these games. And this, make no mistake about it, this was not designed with the best interest of the U.S. taxpayer. This was designed on Wall Street, by Wall Street, for Wall Street.
So you're saying no clean break here. We're still in the clutches of the dynamics that got us here.
That's what I believe. I mean, if you look at other aspects of the Obama administration and the Bush administration, you could not imagine two more different back-to-back administrations. If you look at the transition from Paulson to Geithner, it's the same team.
Jeffrey Frankel, we'll come back and get your response on just that front. Robert Kuttner, we're glad you're here. We're looking at the Obama plan for America's bad banks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the Obama plan for America's bad banks, toxic assets, bailout, the strategy, the team, the toxic asset bailout plan, call it what you will, much more rolling out today from Timothy Geithner and the Obama administration. We're joined by Robert Kuttner, co-founder, co-editor of the American Prospect magazine. Jeffrey Frankel is here, professor of capital formation and growth at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He served on the Council of Economic Advisors in the Clinton administration. We'll hear in just a moment from Stephen Kaplan of the University of Chicago Business School. Jeffrey Frankel, I want to get your response to Bob Kuttner, but let's get our listeners in first, just for a second. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because I think that this plan is a betrayal of the election. This is, unlike what has been said, this is exactly the Paulson plan. This is a bailout designed by Wall Street for Wall Street. I'm highly suspicious of it. There's details coming out now about the AIG bailout and the involvement in Goldman in that and Paulson designing basically passing on federal money through AIG to Goldman through their credit default swap accounts.
Steve, I know everybody's angry at Wall Street these days, but don't we need it to work?
Same thing is going on right now.
But don't sooner or later you need Wall Street to work and be part of the answer here?
Hey, those firms have failed. Let them fail. If as has been pointed out, if this goes on, the country can be facing years of a recession. We see what goes on when these zombie banks just aren't allowed to die. It's, you know, let them die.
Steve, we've got it. Let me get another call right here, if we may, and then we'll come to Jeffrey Frankel. Sean in Goose Creek, South Carolina. Sean, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Yes, my name is Sean, and my brother died suddenly. He was a Navy Vietnam era vet, and my mother was living with him, and so there were particular assets, and so I was able to hold on to the home for some time, but taking care of my mother, who developed dementia after her eldest son's sudden and unexpected death. Anyway, so, but I have a particular...
Shauna, I see here that you've just lost your home and have to be out by the end of this week. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, what's your comment or question?
I currently have a fractured pelvis, but my idea is, for rather than give the money to the monsters that created this situation, is to perhaps put a moratorium on the mortgages that are the foreclosures that are going on, and allow the little guys that got President Obama elected to recoup a little bit, not have this dragon breathing down their neck. And
Sean, let us look at exactly that, and good luck to you. Okay, Jeffrey Frankel, Stephen Cambridge says betrayal. Sean in Goose Creek says, give me a break here. Never mind the banks. I need a break right now. You've heard the critique of this, you know, right across from Kuttner and our callers. What do you say, Jeffrey?
Well, I'd say our last two callers are accurate reflections of what we know is out there. Tremendous anger at the financial sector for getting us into this mess, and real pain and anxiety about the recession. I mean, it's the worst financial crisis in 75 years, and it'll probably be the worst recession since the Great Depression. And there are people to blame, but it's important. So I understand the anger, and it's valid, but it's important to channel it in the right direction. And then let me make an analogy, which is kind of a high stakes one.
Okay.
After September 11th, everybody was really, really angry and really, really upset. And unfortunately, that anger got channeled into completely the wrong policies, into policies that made things worse rather than better. I mean, it was tax cuts for the rich and invading an irrelevant country. It's important how you channel the anger. So let me get a little bit more specific now on what this whether this is a bailout designed for Wall Street by Wall Street. And whether it's just a continuation of the Paulson plan. It's not just a continuation of the Paulson plan. In the Paulson plan, the government bought these toxic assets. By now, I'm just sick of the word toxic. But,
right. Aren't we all?
Right.
Legacy.
And legacy assets.
That's a new phrase. Legacy assets sounds kind of nice, but yeah. They're not nice.
Well, anyway, okay. But nobody – they're left over from the past. It does capture this notion. And as President Obama said a few days ago on the Jay Leno show, I think the time to lock the barn door is before the horse is stolen, not after the horse is stolen.
But it's after. So what do we do?
And it's
after.
What do you see? So here's one way in which it differs is that well, the first Paulson plan was a mess. It was vague, and there was no oversight and no upside for the taxpayer.
No transparency. Nobody knew what was going on.
But then they revised it. They made it. They made it a little better over time. But still, they bought these toxic assets, giving money to the banks, people who got us into this trouble, and the price they paid for them, no one knows what they're worth. That's the problem, because they're not traded. And so the price was just something, you know, I guess made up by some Treasury bureaucrat behind closed doors. This is different. The point of this
there's
is
an
to
auction
have,
here.
The pricing comes out of the private sector. It's how much the private sector is willing to pay for it. And the private sector, the people who are paying for it in this partnership with the government, are not the exact same people who got us into the trouble. They're not the banks and all that. They're sovereign wealth funds and hedge funds and new money that the bottom dweller, bottom feeders who are going to come in. Let me also, this designed by Wall Street and for Wall Street. Let me explain the job that Tim Geithner had before he was Treasury Secretary. He was president of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York.
Right.
And before that, he was at the IMF, and before that, he was in the Treasury. He has spent his entire career as a public civil servant. He has never, so far as I know, worked in the private sector at all, which, you know, maybe some people might worry about it, but not the financial sector.
But he was cheek by jowl with Wall Street of necessity.
Yeah,
that
but
was
he
his
could,
job.
If he wanted to make money, he could have. He didn't have
We got that. We got that.
He could have made 100 times more money if that's what he had wanted to do.
Auction dynamic, Robert Kuttner. Why doesn't that protect the public interest here? You know, pay what they're worth. Pay what they're worth.
Well, just look back on the past 10 years, and we've seen how markets mispriced things. Look at how AIG mispriced the amount of reserves it had to put up against credit default swaps. There's no guarantee in a situation like this that an auction is going to price things correctly, particularly given that the government is guaranteeing so much of the loss and the market gets to reap so much of the gain. And by the way, there is an alternative to this. You know, the word nationalization is thrown around like a bogeyman. Every week of the year, the FDIC takes over a failed bank. The shareholders lose what's left of their common stock.
Always has done. When things go bad, they step
Management
in.
Management loses their job. The biggest one they've done so far is a bank called IndyMac. It was a $32 billion bank. The FDIC doesn't have the resources to take over Citi, which is the weakest of the big banks, and put it into a kind of receivership. But if you look at the Reconstruction Finance Corporation of the 30s as a model, RFC at one point owned about 30% of the stock in U.S. banks. It behaved like an owner, unlike what Treasury is doing. And the way this model works, it's a public corporation where you don't have to hire Wall Street to supervise Wall Street. You have competent public officials the way the FDIC does. And you take banks into receivership, government auditors figure out just how deep the hole is. You figure out how much of the hole is made up by taxpayers and how much of a haircut the bondholders have to take, and you get the thing up and running again. It's more
Then you put it back in the private sector.
Then you put it back in the private sector. It's more straightforward. It's less convoluted. It's not doubling down on the same model. And that's the alternative that's waiting in the wings. That's the road not taken.
But that isn't that the thing that's giving, you know, the shivers to a lot of people right now? Because, I mean, Congress already intervening after the bonus outrage to say, well, here's what you're going to pay. And here's we're told Wall Street's in a lather because they're afraid they're going to be answering to public officials who will who won't let them do what they do.
This is the worst of both worlds. The Treasury, which does not have the resources to do this properly, is intervening in an episodic and ad hoc way. If you're going to have this degree of government involvement, it's better to do it with your eyes open, with some transparency.
Does the FDIC really have the resources to get its arms around the biggest banks in the country?
No, but you could give it more resources. Mm-hmm. And the FDIC has been pulled into this very reluctantly, let me say.
Even now.
Right. When they realized that not even the Fed had enough money, I mean, the Fed's balance sheet is starting to be at risk. They drag the FDIC into this, and they're using insurance funds that are supposed to be there to backstop deposit insurance. They're using insurance funds to double down on this latest gamble. I think the whole thing is like one of these Rube Goldberg contraptions, and it could be done much more straightforwardly. Either way, the government is heavily involved.
Robert Kuttner has got a kind of progressive view of what's going on here today. Jeffrey Frankel's sort of our man in the middle. I want to bring in Stephen Kaplan right now. He's a professor of entrepreneurship and finance at the University of Chicago Business School. Joins us today from Park City, Utah. Professor Kaplan, thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Tom.
You've probably been out on the slopes for all we know, but what do you make of what's coming out of Washington, Timothy Geithner's new toxic asset bailout plan? How's it look to you?
Well, I'm going to agree with Jeff that it is very complicated and there are no great solutions, and that's about it. I have to agree with Bob, which I don't often do, on most of what he said. This is not a good solution. There are better solutions out there, and the plan is flawed. Now, I'm going to go a little bit into more detail than Jeff and Bob did, and I think the thing to understand is there are two possible scenarios. The scenario number one, which the administration is banking on, is that the toxic assets, and they are toxic assets, not legacy, are undervalued and that the banks are fundamentally solvent. That was the assumption in the original Paulson plan. That is the assumption here. The other scenario is that the toxic assets are correctly valued and the banks are not solvent. This is where Paul Krugman is from. This is Nouriel Roubini. Mm-hmm. On the right, you've got Luigi Zingales, one of my colleagues, Ken Rogoff, former head of the IMF, chief economist at the IMF. And in my view, that's probably the more likely scenario. So now let's look at what happens in this plan under those two scenarios. If the scenario is that the toxic assets are correctly valued and the banks are not solvent, meaning they don't have enough equity to support their business, this plan is not going to help.
Why not? I mean, you're still going to have hedge fund, private equity money coming in here, bidding on this stuff.
Because the banks won't sell. Because if they've got these things marked at a particular point, if the value that the hedge funds pay is not above those marks, this doesn't help because it doesn't give them more equity. The whole idea here is to get the banks solvent, to get them more equity.
But that would stop everything here from the get-go. I mean, it would be just a non-starter then. Nothing would happen, if you're right.
That is correct. And that's the view. I mean, that's where, I think Bob is, and that, I think, is the most likely scenario. Because remember, the economy has deteriorated substantially since the first Paulson plan. And, you know, we were in trouble at that time.
Maybe Geithner is gambling that the hedge funds will come in anyway because there's so much government leverage in this that even if they have to bid more than they think they're actually worth, they're protected on the downside. Maybe they'll take the same gamble that Geithner is taking, Stephen Kaplan.
Well, and this goes back to what Bob was saying, they take that gamble and now you've created a situation where it's heads, the hedge funds win, and tails, the government loses. And this becomes a very, very expensive program. And that's also the case, by the way, if we're in the situation where it is a liquidity problem, not a solvency problem. The hedge funds will either make a lot of money, which will create outrage at the other end, or the government will end up losing a lot of money, neither of which is great. And there are better solutions. The government really doesn't get anything here. In Bob's case, where they take a lot of, basically take a lot of equity in the company, the government gets equity. The other solution, which nobody has mentioned, and this is one Luigi Zingales has come up with, I believe Ken Rogoff is sympathetic to this, is do something like Chapter 11 plus or Chapter 12, where you take the long-term debt in these financial institutions and you convert them into equity. That solves the solvency problem because all of a sudden the banks now have a lot more equity and it costs the government nothing.
Jeffrey Frankel, there's our Chicago school guy on the other end of the political spectrum from Bob Cutner saying no thanks for him too.
Well, two points. First, if the banks won't take it, then I don't see how it could be a bailout designed by Wall Street for Wall Street. If the banks don't take it, it's because they don't think it's sufficiently attractive. So those two critiques are inconsistent with each other.
But meaning you think people will come in and buy these assets, that the valuations aren't so all over the place?
Well, I don't.
You got scenario one is that's right, but under scenario two, this is a big subsidy to the banks, and it is a big cost to the taxpayer. Jeff, there's just no way around that.
So let's remind the listeners what's scenario one and scenario two. Scenario one is that the toxic assets are undervalued, and the banks are truly solvent if only the markets would recognize the true value. And scenario two is that they're correctly valued, and the banks are not solvent. The problem is, I mean, this distinction between solvency and liquidity, we all use it, but it's quite artificial. If what we all want is the economy to recover from the recession, the financial sector to recover and become reliquified, et cetera, and this, of course, is by no means the totality of the Obama administration's program. We've got the fiscal stimulus out there and a number of other programs. And whether or not what these assets are worth, there's a reason why no one knows what they're worth. In part, it's because if the recovery happened, they'd be worth a lot more. And so we're trying to get into this good equilibrium where their value does rise.
You're saying we need the market players to help us do that.
We need the market players to come up with some sort of price, which admittedly would be arbitrary. And Bob Cutner's right that, you know, it's not going to be anything magic. But it's better than somebody in the bowels of the Treasury making a guess how much the assets are worth and paying the banks for it, which is what the previous administration was doing.
Bob, how else do we get back on an even keel here?
Well, you know, there's another variable here that we haven't talked about. A lot of these so-called toxic assets are backed by toxic mortgages. Mm-hmm. And my other criticism of Mr. Guyton—
In other words, these are packages of lousy mortgages.
Right, right. Now, my other criticism of Mr. Guyton is that his plan for getting relief to mortgage holders suffers from exactly the same characteristics as this plan. It's too complicated. It's too voluntary. It depends too much on speculation in the private sector. And as a result, my calculation suggests that at most, the administration's approach to rescuing underwater mortgages is going to help maybe one mortgage holder in three at best. So if that's the case, you're not going to put a floor under housing prices, and the mortgages that underlie these toxic assets are not going to come back to life, and the toxic assets are not going to come back to life.
But you're suggesting that Guyton himself doesn't believe this is going to work, but surely he does. Otherwise, he'll be judged on this. You know, the facts will out. The things will
end. I just think he's mistaken. And again, I think the shortest distance between two points here is something like a Reconstruction Finance Corporation. The government's going to have to pay one way or another. It's much cleaner and much simpler to have the government pay directly. And by the way, the populist anger that was
very hot last week.
Very hot last week because of AIG. The simplest way to pick up on something Jeff was saying, to turn that populist anger in a constructive direction, is to say, look, we tried this, it didn't work. Here's a better plan that doesn't bribe Wall Street into fixing it, but does it directly that helps ordinary people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Obama plan for America's bad banks, toxic assets, bailout, the strategy, the team rolling all this out. We're joined today by Stephen Kaplan, University of Chicago Business School. He's in Park City, Utah, kind of a very market dynamic view of what's going on. He's not happy with it. Jeffrey Frankel is here, was on the Council of Economic Advisors in the Clinton administration. He says, let's try this. This can work. Robert Kuttner's with us, co-editor of the American Prospect magazine. No thanks. From the progressive perspective, he says, let's just, Bob, you're saying, let's take these things over, wring them out, and not deal with hedge funds and private equity to make it happen. Let's get a call from Burlington, Vermont. Brian. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My first point is that the plan that came out today is clearly not free market capitalism. And I think it's always ironic that we hear from Wall Street and the business community in this country, they're always screaming about free market capitalism, how we need to loosen up, and that, the plan is clearly insured by the government, and it's essentially welfare. And I like Mr. Kuttner's idea, and I think Simon Johnson has talked about this a lot, where, you know, they need to take these banks into receivership, flip them fast, get them back into the private sector, that's fine with me, but that at the end, there's got to be systemic change. They have to make sure that there's going to be regulation, that so we're not going to find ourselves with some new weird little financial product that they've come up with in 10 years that's going to keep us in the same place that we are now.
Brian, we've got it. Jeffrey Frankel, Brian says not free market capitalism. Doesn't sound like he's in any rush to get to that either. He wants receivership and new regulation, maybe a better balance here of regulation and market dynamics. Do you see this? I mean, is this fish or fowl or just the necessary as extraordinary steps were taken in the 30s?
Well, there's no question that this is not free market capitalism. And I think we've seen in past years a lot of hypocrisy from a lot of people who purport to be in favor of free market capitalism. And in fact, when they were in power, were giving subsidies for their favorite industries and expanding the size of government, et cetera, et cetera. But I think most people agree now. There's a few libertarians out there, but basically most people agree that for the financial sector, you do have such things as runs on banks. You do have to have some government involvement. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem here is that we had the non-banking sector wasn't regulated in the same way that the banking sector was regulated. And so you need some sort of government intervention.
But to Brian, he's saying it looks like welfare to him. Welfare for bankers, banks, maybe hedge funds. There's a curious new kind of – I mean, people have new perspectives on this, and they want something new to emerge from this. Do you see this heading toward – a positive new balance of oversight and market animal spirits?
Well, of course, the whole thing has had it smelled like a sort of corporate welfare, and I don't and rewarding the people who caused a problem. And that's the anger behind the AIG bonuses. Of course, that's right. I also think, by the way, it's probably an obstacle to some of these other proposals. If we did nationalization or something, it mm-hmm. might get perceived as this is a complete bailout and this is more of the same. I mean, there's severe political obstacles here, sort of wherever you turn. So we've heard this come up a number of different ways from Bob Kuttner and from some mm-hmm. from some of the callers. Either put them in receivership or do what the FDIC does, or have a new RFC, a nationalization or whatever. And mm-hmm. you know, look, some of those proposals are by Zingales and others are clever, and it may even come to that. But there's certain, I think, good reasons why we're not doing that yet. Why the Obama administration has chosen not to do that yet. One point is where to draw the line. I mean, it has to be complicated. We have thousands of banks. People talk about the Swedish model, but Sweden only had a few big banks. Mm-hmm. And the FDIC, they deal with a few, you know, bankruptcy banks every month or whatever, but they can't manage the whole system. And to say nothing of the fact that there's nobody at Treasury now except Geithner. You're not a single other confirmed official, and so they're vastly undermanned. So you can't you have to make decisions about who are the good banks and the bad banks, and you know, that's the way it's always done, and that's very hard to manage. Second is the political opposition, which I mentioned. Third is the budget. I mean, this would be so much easier if we still had the budget surplus that we had 8 years ago.
Gone. Let's go to David in Ithaca, New York. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
I just have I've got another suggestion that, I mean, there's a lot of this backlash from conservative folks thinking that coming in and nationalizing the banks is not the idea. Well, what about this? What about giving the banks an option? If you would like, the government come in and buy these toxic assets, possibly at a discount, possibly at the, you know, I know it's hard because they've all been sold in tranches, but do your best possible to figure out a value of what the original value was. I think one of the big things about these banks is they're sitting there hedging their bets, waiting to see, you know, because possibly in these in these toxic assets, a lot of these assets are still good, and they can still make a lot of money on them, so they don't want to give them up. But you give them a choice. Look, you're not going to get bailed out. You have two choices. One, we'll come in and take these away. The government can then go back to the homeowners and refinance the mortgages, maybe give people the option of a 50-year mortgage so they can actually bring their payments down. They can make those kind of choices. Banks can't because they're private. They have to answer to quarterly reports. We take that out of the system. The banks can freely loan again, and maybe 20, 30 years down the line, the government starts selling these back to the banks.
David, let us pick it up. Robert Kuttner, is this the song you're singing that David brings us from Ithaca?
Well,
a piece of it?
Yeah. I mean, look, let me come back to Buy Wall Street for Wall Street, because
mm-hmm.
That's been challenged. Who are we talking about here? We're talking about hedge funds and private equity.
That the government wants to entice,
right.
That Obama wants to entice to get in here with them,
right.
Highly leveraged, and buy this stuff up.
Right. Jeff correctly makes the point that these non-banks were too weakly regulated. You can't very well say, on the one hand, come and play this game with us, and on the other hand, oh, by the way, we're going to crack down and regulate you.
That is hedge funds, et cetera.
Right. Mm-hmm. So here's hedge funds. Blackstone, I mean, that's private equity. Their shares are down 85%. They exist to do deals, complicated, highly leveraged
mm-hmm.
deals.
Mm-hmm.
This gives them a chance. This gives them a new lease on life. Better yet, it's guaranteed by the government. Hedge funds, people are deserting hedge funds in droves. This gives them a new lease on life. And I think the administration is underestimating the populist backlash against using taxpayer money and taxpayer guarantees so that a whole new round of rich guys, in some cases the same old rich guys, can get even richer at taxpayer expense. I also think that the government is going to need more money one way or the other. And if you do it via an RFC where you don't enrich private speculators, but you help ordinary people and you do it directly.
1930s style.
There's going
government
to be,
in the middle of it.
There's going to be much more popular consent for spending taxpayer money and putting taxpayer loan guarantees at risk if you don't do it by enriching a lot of middlemen, but you do it more straightforwardly. And, you know, Citi, what Citigroup worries about, since they are – I mean, if anybody's insolvent, Citi's insolvent, right?
Mm-hmm.
The government has put about $65 billion into Citi. You can buy the thing by buying up all of its shares for $17 billion right now. If that's not insolvent, I don't know what's insolvent, because if it weren't for all this government money, they'd be out of business. So we're really not talking about 12,000 banks. We're talking about a handful of large banks, Citi, maybe Bank of America, possibly Wells Fargo, that would have to go through some kind of receivership project and come out the other side. Much better to do this straightforwardly.
Steve Kaplan, you are a Chicago school guy here, market dynamic guy. Can we get the market involved here without handing this off to rich, unregulated parties? Would that work? Are you opposed to that piece of this? What about Robert Kuttner saying, forget it, let's go RFC style, get the government right in the middle of it, take over, nationalize if necessary, clean this up, and go the public route with public money after all?
I am much more sympathetic to Bob's proposal. I think the one thing that you can do here that actually doesn't necessarily cost the government money is you have at Citi, at Bank America, at many of these companies, you have billions of dollars of long-term debt outstanding that is not government guaranteed and is trading below its par or original value. Anytime we subsidize the banks like this plan does, we are giving some money to those long-term debt holders and to the equity investors in the banks. If you forced the long-term debt holders to convert into equity, which is sort of a receivership, sort of a Chapter 11, but could be done somewhat differently so that the government wasn't necessarily running things, you get a private sector solution, and the banks become potentially quite solvent because there's a lot of long-term debt out there and it doesn't cost the government anything. So in that sense, it's not a bailout. I think Bob's plan is also not a bailout in that he would also have the effect of forcing the long-term debt holders into equity.
Jeffrey Frankel, what do you say here? We've got all kinds of plans on the table here, but Timothy Geithner's is the one with the weight of rule behind it.
Yeah, look, we may we may eventually end up with something like what Steve's talking about, what Bob's talking about. But but I think this is worth a try. I think it's a lot of thought has gone into it. It's a genuine attempt at private-public partnership, getting the pricing from the private sector, getting financing from the private sector, making it just attractive enough, hopefully, so that there'll be participation, but not so attractive that you're, you know, making people rich for in return for nothing.
And what about Bob Kuttner's concern? How do you work with these wealthy hedge funds and work to further regulate them at the same time? Can you do both?
Well, I think that regulation, fundamental restructuring the system, is something that we have to do. I think we've learned that now. We should have learned it earlier. I think we should have learned it in 2001 with the Enron scandal and all that. But I believe the Obama administration is planning to do that. But there is such a thing as putting out the fire before you reorganize the fire department. So I definitely agree that regulation, although it has to be the right kind of regulation, it's not just good regulation, yes versus no. It's got to be well-designed regulation. Should include these non-banks like the hedge funds and the private equity companies. But I don't think that has to be inconsistent with them playing a role now.
Stephen Kaplan, please.
On the regulation side,
yeah.
You know, it's ironic that everybody is talking about the unregulated part of the economy. The big problem is the banks, and the banks were regulated. We had a problem with the regulation and with government action. The Fed inflated the economy and created, to some extent, the asset bubble. The SEC allowed the investment banks to get too leveraged, and Congress encouraged people to buy houses who potentially couldn't afford them. So I think we do need better regulation, but I think we should be careful to say this is all a private sector fiasco. This is a fiasco that was caused by just about everybody.
Well, of course, there was a certain philosophy running the public side of this equation for a long time. Let's get a call from Kelsey in Salem, Massachusetts. Kelsey, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. One of the points that I wanted to make is that where I think the media is failing us right now, and what is then in turn being a big barrier for the executive and legislative branch to solve this or
okay.
work towards a solution,
yeah.
is that for your average lay person, everyone is, you know, so outraged that, well, if I can't pay my mortgage, I get evicted, but, you know, the banks fail, they get bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a major issue is that in all of the economic jargon, your average person isn't always getting that, to an extent, if the banks fail, we can't get loans for our houses, for our cars. The companies we work for can't get loans to cover their payroll, and then we lose our jobs. And in effect, then, everyone just gets so upset, and everyone's automatically against any sort of assistance. And don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. I agree that, to put it bluntly, you know, stupid should hurt. They've made bad decisions, but I think that a lot of people who are outraged aren't processing what the domino effect is and how all of us are impacted if, yes, those guys who are making bad decisions end up having to fully pay the worst consequences.
Right. Kelsey, thanks for that. Bob Kuttner, that's exactly what President Obama was saying just last night on 60 Minutes. We've got to get in here so that this doesn't get worse, so that we're not facing a full-blown depression.
Well, of course, and I think the one thing that all three of us around this table, or two of us at the table and one in Utah, yeah. would agree on is that something drastic has to be done. You can't just let the banking system fold. Public money is going to be involved. I think what we're arguing about is what's the best, most efficient route to do this that rewards the fewest middlemen and delivers the most aid to the people who need it.
You're more or less saying Timothy Geithner should go to let something better happen.
Well, I certainly think that the president, without the mediation of Mr. Lawrence Summers, should be talking to some of Mr. Geithner's critics, starting with Paul Volcker, and hear this from the horse's mouth so that the president hears firsthand the availability of a plan B and doesn't get locked into this as the only possible approach.
Steve Kaplan, Tim Geithner is the man to guide us on through this. Robert Kuttner suggesting maybe Paul Volcker ought to be stepping in.
Personnel decisions. I guess I would say I'm disappointed with what Geithner has done to this point, and that would lead me to agree with Bob, although, you know, whether it's Paul Volcker or somebody else, I don't know.
Jeffrey Frankel, maybe you know something that Stephen and Robert don't hear. I mean, the markets, as we said earlier, have started out today. Europe and Asia certainly quite positive on all this.
They're just back where they were on Thursday, and they're still down 12% this year. So it's a marginal up, but the bottom line is it's down.
Still, the last time, Jeffrey, that Tim Geithner stepped up and talked about banking, they did a huge belly flop. I mean, maybe the light's coming up here.
Well, so a couple of points. First, I can't pass up saying I agree completely with Steve's diagnosis of the problem. I mean, there's more than just the three things he named, but they're high on the list. Fed following overly expansionary monetary policy a few years ago, the SEC allowing excessive leverage, Congress's policy towards home ownership, a few more things mm-hmm. I put on the list. And there is plenty of blame to go around. And we all also agree that we're in a very severe problem, recession and financial crisis. So the question is just how to fix it. And I guess we agree there's no easy answers. In terms of the reaction, I think it's pretty unfair to talk about how the markets are relative to the beginning of the year. President Obama has been hit by the worst set of economic shocks since anybody in a long time.
And been handed those.
And so I think it is valid to look at reactions to individual days' events. Yeah, I mean, I compare you remember Harry Houdini had the trick that he'd be in the straitjacket and in the coffin with the chains around him.
Underwater.
The river. Yeah, well, so to me, Obama is Harry Houdini. I mean, already 2 years ago, he had the problem of the debt and Iraq, and then there were more and more chains: the financial crisis, the recession, and he added two more chains, which he wants to solve this in a bipartisan way and appoint his staff at a level of ethics never seen before. The question is, can he get out of it?
Well, let's hope that Houdini, the economy, and us all come out of this dry and on dry land. Jeffrey Frankel, thank you so much for being with us today. Robert Kuttner, Stephen Kaplan, thanks for joining us, Professor Kaplan. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.